Sarah Talk is brought to you exclusively by our patrons at patreon.com/Sarah Talk. Honestly, guys, we couldn't do this without you. Thank you so much.
You're listening to Sarah Talk. It's political.
This rhetoric about make America great again. Tell me when America was great and we'll go back there. I'm going with you.
Critical.
Hang on. Let me change some words here. All right, ready?
Adults with religious confusion who truly believe in a higher power that created us and actually cares what we do with our penises and vaginas should be treated with care, compassion, and kindness, but must not be officially affirmed in their confusion, no matter how sincerely held.
Fuck you.
And positively LGBT positive.
In many states, you can still be evicted from housing simply for being gay or transgender. Stand and fight with us.
Oh, and occasionally, completely absurd.
You women have a flame coming out of your vagina. You talk about being hot. Well, you sure not gonna be hot. You're gonna have a flame shooting out of your vagina. You're gonna need asbestos panties to stop that.
And now, from Orlando, Florida, your host, Sarah Austin.
Hey, everybody. Sarah Austin here in the studio with me today, my wife, Becca.
Hello.
Welcome to episode 50.
Woohoo!
I feel like there should be something, but there's not.
Nothing.
Yeah, don't be waiting for anything special today for the...
Sorry.
Sorry. hey, listen, we've been busy, all right? We've all been sick, as we discussed last week. I'm still...
yeah.
Phlegmy.
Everybody's phlegmy.
We're all still coughing and hacking, so... sorry, we didn't have time to celebrate, so, you know, celebrate for us. But just funny thing, right before we went live here, we were listening back to some old clips to thinking about refreshing our intro, and we went back to the Pastor James David Manning Sodomite Slayer clip.
Love that clip.
It's very good. And I don't know, the one I'm thinking of using in replacement of it is from the same clip, but I think it's pretty good too.
Yeah. We'll come up with something fun.
Anyway, I don't listen to our old episodes, like, often. That's not a thing that I do. Like, I listen to the episode when it releases, pretty mm-hmm. much, make sure it sounds good, and then that's it.
Yeah.
So, to go back, like, God, well, this was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, we've been doing this for a while now. Like, it took us a while to get on track of every week.
Yeah.
You know? And now, not only are we every week, now we're on time,
mm-hmm.
every week, 8 a.m. Monday morning Eastern time. Tune in on Spreaker, spreaker.com/Sarah Talk if you want to listen live with us each week. But then, like, just the quality of audio difference.
It's crazy.
From one to the next. Like, I'm tempted to dig up a clip and play it because it's just crazy.
Yeah, how different it is. I was surprised.
I'll line that up for after the break.
Yeah.
We'll do that after the break.
Okay. Good idea.
So, also, can we talk about my drunk introduction there? Sarah Talk is brought to you exclusively by our patrons. I was under the influence of, like, NyQuil.
Yeah.
I need to re-record that.
Yeah, just a little bit.
I don't know. Now it's kind of funny. Now I giggle about it.
Nah.
In the second half of the show today, we have a lot of news to talk about. First of all, I have to make it up to you because I lied to you last week and told you we were going to talk about the Gavin Grimm case, and we never really did. I have printed out the judge's order from the United States Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit. So we're going to talk about some of the things that they said in their final order. We're going to talk about the new Supreme Court Justice Neil Gorsuch and how much damage he's probably going to do. I get some Donald Trump. Donald Trump sent me an email.
Oh,
yep.
Again?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I get like two a week at least.
Wow.
Yeah.
How are you on his radar?
He's always wanting my... I filled out a survey.
Oh, remember the very biased support, survey?
Yeah.
The,
do you support, yeah. You know, fake news and Democrats?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or do you support Donald Trump? So he sent me an interesting email. We'll talk about that.
Very nice.
There are some state legislatures trying to do some sneaky shit when it comes to church-state separation. We're going to talk about that. We're going to get back into the whole circumcision, female genital mutilation discussion once again on the news. What else? Talk about some bathroom bill stuff.
There's a very large stack of paper in your hands right now.
Huge.
Got a lot to talk about.
North Carolina's being awful again. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. And we'll see what we can get to. But let's go to our interview first with Laura A. Jacobs.
Let's do it.
Joining us now on the phone, Laura A. Jacobs. Laura is a trans and queer-identified psychotherapist in the New York City area, specializing in, broadly, sexual and gender minority populations. She is the chair of the board of directors at Colin Lord Community Health Center. Laura is an activist, public speaker, and author devoted to the exploration of identity and the relationship between individual and society, the diversity of gender identity and sexual expression, and the search for meaning. She writes for the Huffington Post, and along with Dr. Laura Erickson Schroth, is a co-author of the upcoming book, You're in the Wrong Bathroom, and 20 Other Myths and Misconceptions About Transgender and Gender Nonconforming People. Laura, welcome to Sarah Talk.
Hi, thanks very much. By the way, it's You're in the Wrong Bathroom.
We have to scream it, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, we're thrilled to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thrilled to have you on and able to talk about this. Of course, we talk about this a little ad nauseum here on the show.
I'm sure.
Which is why we felt
it needed to be addressed really openly in the book.
Exactly. So, give us a little bit of your background beyond that kind of clinical introduction. Who is Laura Jacobs? Tell us about your life. Maybe a little about your own identity.
Well, we only have a half an hour. So.
Yeah. The Reader's Digest version.
But, yeah, okay, sure. A little bit about me. I'm trans and gender queer identified. I was male assigned at birth.
Mm-hmm.
For the earlier part of my life, I was very artsy. I was a musician. I played in bands. I recorded in studios, composed work for independent theater, things like that. But I was feeling very unfulfilled and had dropped out of college, and eventually my Jewish parents persuaded me to return to college, because isn't that what every good Jewish kid does?
Mazel tov.
And thank you. My parents are very proud. And eventually decided that pursuing becoming a therapist was a good idea for me. In that window, I transitioned from male to female. Initially, I was presenting in a very binary, traditionally heteronormative female kind of way. And over time, as I just began to explore my own gender more and gave myself more permission to explore my own gender more, I really started to explore outside of binaries. And now I've come to a place where I incorporate a lot of masculinity in how I present and how I dress, and I no longer really even worry about things like pronouns. Mm. I feel like it's hard to even describe my gender in terms of binaries. I think my gender is just sort of, one friend described me as gender everything. And
just you.
I guess that yeah. kind of works. And I, you know, I dress, a lot of people would call it dapper. You know, that was a number of years ago. I transitioned quite a while ago. And so over time, I've been doing more and more public speaking and activism and writing and so on, trying to, again, help people think about the role of gender in our lives, the role of gender in our identities, and sort of just help people make conscious choices about how they want to live the gendered part of their lives, or their lives in any other way. You know, I think the same about sexuality or, you know, any other life choice.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be a quick overview. I live in the New York area, and let's leave it there. And yeah. I drive a convertible. So.
Nice.
So let's kind of jump, I guess, right into the legal things that are going on a little bit.
Sure.
You know, and again, we talk about this at length. The Gavin Grimm case was just sent back from the Supreme Court. And all these awful discriminatory bills, you know, House Bill 2 in North Carolina was almost kind of maybe not really rescinded. And then now Texas is looking at their garbage Senate Bill 6. Is that, I mean, you kind of answered this a little bit, but is that kind of what you guys had in mind in sitting down to write this book?
Yeah, well, in part, yes. I mean, there are so many myths and misconceptions that are out there about transgender people. That we just, you know, we felt like times are shifting. Transgender people are to some extent more and more included in public life. We're seeing more and more, I work with a lot of transgender adolescents, so we're seeing more and more trans people in school settings, and more and more people know somebody trans in their life, even if they are not trans themselves. And yet, you know, our history is a very complicated history, and some of the myths that are still prevalent in culture either have to do with historical things that don't really aren't really as relevant anymore, or are just based on stereotypes and misconceptions and biased beliefs that don't really hold true. But for some reason, these things persist.
Yeah.
These ideas persist, and they're very often very harmful. Or just very limiting of possibilities. And so we really wanted to try and look at a bunch of those and see how we could deconstruct them in a way that really shed light on the issues.
Right. So some of the things you tackle in the book, trans people are trapped in the wrong body, which I'll admit was the way that once upon a time I described myself maybe about a decade ago.
Sure.
You're not really trans if you haven't had the surgery. People are mentally ill or can be changed. Trans people are a danger to others, especially children. If you don't mind, let's walk through maybe one or two of these examples and that we often hear from the anti-trans folks. I think one of the things we're starting to see coming from maybe the religious right, particularly as I listen to testimony in Texas, they seem to be getting the message that saying trans people are dangerous doesn't hold up to either evidentiary scrutiny or to legal tests, right? So maybe they're kind of altering that message to be more about other people who might use these laws as an opening for, quote, bad actors to commit sex crimes. What do you make of that kind of change in the argument? And is there, the counter argument we've been using of, look, there's just no evidence to support those fears doesn't seem to be looking. Is there a better way to counter that narrative?
I think that comes down to two things. One is that, you know, it highlights that underneath this is not really a logical reasoning, but just, just an attempt to legislate trans people out of existence. Mm-hmm. If trans people can't use public bathrooms that they're comfortable with, well, then you can't be out in public, right?
Right.
If I want to go to the mall and have dinner and watch a movie, but, you know, at some point, I'm going to need to use the restroom, but I can't use the restroom because I'm too scared to use the one that was associated with the gender I was assigned at birth. Well, I'm going to be hesitant to go to the mall, right?
Mm-hmm.
So ultimately, a lot of this legislation seems to be trying to legislate trans people out of existence. Now, when you hear these notions that, as you say, it's trying to protect from other people who might assume the label of being trans for malicious purposes. Well, you know, it's always been illegal for somebody to go into a bathroom and commit some sort of act, right?
Yeah.
That's been legal that's been illegal for generations, I assume, right?
Yeah.
If a cis man is going to go into a women's bathroom, whether they're wearing a dress or not, whether they claim that they are trans so that they can quote unquote get away with it or not, that's still illegal. Mm. So, you know, here again, society is trying to put the burden, or at least this part of society is trying to put the burden on those most marginalized to conform to the majority's sense of what things should be. Despite that there's no evidence, despite that there's no, that perhaps underneath these are really bigoted notions. And in America, we have a long history of society trying to put the onus on the minority to conform to the majority, despite that that's not officially what this country is about. So that's how I respond to some of to that particular issue and some of the transphobic arguments that come up. As you say, it's not at all. There are no facts that suggest that trans people are there to commit acts on others in bathrooms. In fact, trans people are far more likely to be the ones at risk in bathrooms.
Yeah.
So,
but we kind of live in a. We kind of live in a new world order, though, that, you know, facts just don't matter, and that's just so frustrating.
Well,
yeah, evidence doesn't matter.
We do seem to live in a complex time. Yeah.
Yeah. So as a psychologist, you work with patients of all ages. There's a popular argument that gets made about transgender children. Many of the recent court cases have been about school accommodations. And they say things like, how can a 3-year-old boy think they're a girl? One former educator even said, I taught 4-year-olds. They are confused. Many times they want to be a rabbit. In fact, let's try a little experiment here. I'm going to try to play this clip. It's about a minute long, and hopefully you'll be able to hear it. And it's the most maddening thing I've ever heard.
My name is Sharon Armke. I'm a retired Texas teacher, mother, and grandmother. I live in Dripping Springs, Texas. The turmoil that is being injected into our public school system is intentional by the LGBT activists. The Human Rights Campaign, the same organization paying for the big red signs today and the flyers that were passed out, offers districts such as Austin ISD and other large districts in our state money under the table, 501c3 organizations, and then they're asking them to teach the LGBT curriculum called Welcoming Schools. They teach children as young as 4 to question whether they are a boy or a girl. They use programs such as Welcoming Schools to deliberately promote confusion in children's thinking, to promote a false narrative, an alternative reality that says a child can easily decide whether to be a boy or girl. I taught 4-year-olds. They are confused. Many times they want to be a rabbit.
We discussed on the show recently, again, kind of from my own shallow pool of knowledge, the common standards of consistency, insistency, and persistency. And I think this could probably help a lot of people who find themselves kind of defending the idea of being gender affirming with children and letting them sort of guide their own exploration and experience. And so say there's an allies out there that are listening that may be having these conversations with family and friends that, you know, could you explain that, I guess, a little deeper for us?
Sure. So I will first just issue the disclaimer. I don't actually work with little kids.
Uh-huh.
I work with people from maybe 12 or 13 and up. But I do have colleagues who I am regularly in contact with who work with the little kids, and I present alongside some of those colleagues sometimes. So I know the issues, even if I'm not seeing the little kids. You know, they are correct in that younger kids do explore a lot of things around gender and identity. It's very common for little kids to explore in cross-gender ways. It's pretty normal for little kids assigned female to try on their daddy's ties and things like that. It's pretty normal for kids assigned male to be playing with mommy's high heels if mommy is so inclined to wear high heels. But you know, that is a pretty normal part of childhood. But in some kids, we see that rise to a higher level of really, really insistently saying that they are the other gender, quote unquote, other gender.
Right.
And so in these kids, the distress is so overwhelming that it interferes with their daily life. It interferes with their schoolwork. It interferes with their association and building friends and so on. So with these kids, you know, the arguments that are often used is that, you know, we don't want to subject a 5-year-old kid to irreversible medical treatments and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not what's happening. Nobody is putting a 5-year-old on hormones or advocating any sort of surgery for a 5-year-old.
Yeah.
That's just not happening. What the plans are for kids like this is to try and help them, or what the approach is rather, is to try and help them just explore their gender. if these kids say that they would be more comfortable living in the quote unquote opposite gender for a while, go for it.
Yeah.
The idea is that that as adults, it is our environment to provide, it is our responsibility rather, to provide a safe environment in which these kids can explore their identities. Nobody is trying to impose anything on these kids. It's just giving them the freedom to try things on, to explore things, and to see what works for them. Now, some of these kids will not persist in living that cross-gender life.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them will, a few years later, go back and say, you know, okay, but I think I really want to be a girl again now. And that's fine. The people who seem to have more trouble with that are the parents, not the kids themselves. The kids and their peers are often like, you know, this is okay, this is fine, no big deal. It's often the adults who have more difficulty with that, because sometimes we have difficulty as adults with that sort of fluidity. Mm-hmm. We seem to, as adults, want to help kids nail things down so that we can really be clear on what this kid is, be clear on their gender, and just move forward, because we as adults sometimes have trouble with ambiguity.
Definitely.
We have trouble with things that don't clearly fit one box or another, or don't align, or things that might be changing. We seem to have a need for certainty. Now, I get that these parents are really trying to help their kids. You know, the parents often don't know what to do. And the parents often think that, you know, if we just help this kid find their right gender and then live it the rest of their lives, well, we're avoiding all sorts of trouble that would come down the road. So, like, I'm very sympathetic toward the parents and the allies who want kids to sort of nail it down. But really what we're doing when we're working with kids is just giving them the freedom to explore their gender in age-appropriate ways, and let them live it and see what works for them. And then down the road, maybe make some decisions, but not until mm-hmm. a kid is quite a bit older than five, sure.
And you talk about that ambiguity. You know, we received a comment from a listener recently who identifies as agender. I had made some comment about there was a news story about a single occupancy restroom being signed as gender neutral, and as that being kind of a false appearance of progress, and their as a single stall restroom, and their position was like, hey, don't diss gender neutral spaces, I need them. So that was kind of a reality check for my own perspective. But how do you think we go about incorporating agender, non-binary, non-conforming people into this conversation? Is it something we can fight all at once? Do we need to say, okay, let's tackle the binary part of this challenge first, and then we can come back and fine-tune things for the non-binary? And really, I say all of that to say, is the general public ready to accept maybe legislation that could possibly literally destroy and rebuild private spaces as we know them today?
Well, you know, if we've learned one thing from some of the recent progress that we've seen, I'm thinking here of, like, gay marriage issues and so on,
mm-hmm.
it's that solidarity helps us.
Yeah.
Solidarity is really important. And when we fight for one thing that meets one part of that meets the needs of one part of the community, often what happens is we get that thing, and then sometimes the people in our community who just wanted that thing, they feel done.
Yep.
And sometimes the allies who were helping us with getting that one thing, like gay marriage, feel like, okay, well, we've done this. We don't need to do any more for you. This settles everything, right? And the opponents get more and more frustrated when it's like, okay, we gave you this thing. Now you want more.
Mm-hmm.
So solidarity has really, I think solidarity is key, especially in a time like this where we're facing a certain amount of adversity. So what I think, the idea of trans as binary and as switching from quote unquote one binary gender to the other is still true, but it's also in some ways outdated. You know, that was Christine Jorgensen's narrative right. in the 1950s, mm-hmm. And goes back even further than that. Nowadays, we are seeing this explosion, and the youth that I'm seeing today are identifying in all sorts of ways. These youth are not necessarily identifying in gender binary ways. They're agender, they're gender queer, they're gender fluid, they're demi, semi, whatever this and that. And so, yes, there is a need for these sort of single sex or single stall bathroom, mm-hmm. because there are some people, including people who are like mid-transition, even if they're binary, to have a place where they feel even more safe and private. But I think if I were to sort of think about what I would want the trans movement to be, it would be a movement that is advocating for gender diversity, period. That gender binaries are fine, but also that we're encouraging a culture where people can explore this part of their identity without judgment, without trying to fit into predetermined boxes, and that we just see gender as a part of ourselves and our lives that can tell us who we are, how we fit into society, and give us even a certain sense of existential meaning, why we are here on this planet in this existence altogether. So I think I would be asking the trans movement to be thinking in those sorts of ways, trying to encourage that discussion in popular conversation, rather than worrying about, well, bathrooms are important, certainly, but right. bathrooms are only like one small piece of the issue.
Well, and along with that, you know, I think one mistake that we've made in this on our side, if you call it a side, is that we did dub this, you know, we dubbed this a bathroom issue. And again, we've heard testimony in Texas, restrooms may be a little easier to defend, as in most cases, there are generally private stalls. And while I can't imagine a world where anyone ever wants to get naked in front of anybody else, like at the gym or wherever, you know, we also have to counter the concerns about locker rooms and showers, and again, particularly in school settings. So it's kind of more than bathrooms. What do you respond with to those concerns about spaces where the level of privacy isn't necessarily architecturally designed into the space?
Well, that's where it gets challenging. You know, you can't just ask a school to spend what limited money schools have to start building new bathrooms, to start redesigning their locker rooms and so on. But I think the more we start to think of gender as less about genitalia and more about identity and more about an internal sense of self and feeling and so on, I think the less we will need to be worrying about some of these issues.
Yeah.
I guess maybe I'm thinking 50 years down the road here.
Sure.
And the next 50 years may be bumpy. But, you know, it is tough to address some of those issues. People change in private. People change in the coach's room. People change in, you know, a bathroom stall, things like that. That's already happening. And I have a number of trans adolescents who are changing in the school locker rooms. They're not getting naked,
yeah,
you know, or they're stripping down to their, you know, to underwear and that's it. Or they're, you know, doing it off in a side or the coaches have made some sort of accommodation. And from what they tell me, you know, it's not that big a deal. And some of them wear their gym clothes under their regular clothes. Some of them find other ways. And yeah, it is awkward and there may not be a perfect solution right now, but they seem to be making it work. So,
right. And the conversation is being had at least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And safety, you know, safety is always a conversation that needs to be had. Safety and personal privacy and body autonomy and the idea that victimizing anybody for whatever reason is still a conversation that needs to be had.
Sure.
In schools and whatnot. So, you know, even if there are trans people in the bathrooms or in the locker rooms or wherever it might be, you know, there should still be conversations at the school level about that you don't victimize others, that you don't, you know, assault others, and so on. And that would help create a culture where these people are not as much in fear of their of violence and so on.
Right. Well, you're talking like, you know, you're thinking 50 years into the future. I'm probably thinking 500 years into the future. But but you know, I often think about things like, you know, what if we could get to a point where one day in the future we don't think about genitals in the binary or that. That they're special, have to be hidden away, kinds of body part. You know, what's different between a penis and an elbow or an earlobe? It's a piece of skin that's on our body that performs a function. If we could look at it a little more scientifically, I mean, again, I may be centuries into the future here.
No, I'm with you there, and I there is part of me that does also think, you know, 500, 1,000 years in the future, or whatever, you know, whatever the timeline is, where, you know, at the moment and historically, trans interventions, and by that I mean the medical interventions that trans people have access to right now, are generally designed to mimic natal bodies. Mm-hmm. By that I mean that the surgeries, the hormones, and so on that we have access to right now can give trans women breasts, can give trans women a neo-vagina that's reasonably more or less kind of sort of like a natal vagina. Mm-hmm. Trans-masculine surgeries, well, the chest surgery does a pretty good job of creating a masculine chest. There aren't as great interventions for trans men, quote-unquote, downstairs around phalloplasty and so on, but that's improving, and we're even seeing things like starting to see some transplants, at least in cis people, that may or may not prove to be effective in trans people. But, you know, genitalia are just body parts. I'm thinking about, you know, 100, 500, whatever years mm-hmm. from now, where transness and this openness about gender that I'm thinking, we don't have to think about transitioning, quote unquote, as you know, switching one set of body parts for another, or even adopting a middle identity where we still have some body parts that look one way or the other. But why can't we? Technology is impacting the body more and more every day. We have prosthetic arms, we have prosthetic limbs, and so on, that are more and more starting to really be things that are more and more advanced, let's say. So we have prosthetic arms that are just starting now to transmit sensation. Mm-hmm. They're not just able to physically grasp something. They can transmit a sense of heat and touch and whatever back to the wearer. So why can't we do that with prosthetic genitalia?
Sure.
And down the road. And if so, why do those genitalia have to mimic penis and vagina? Why can't they be genitalia that are artistically created that somehow transmit those sensations back to the user?
I love that. Yeah, that's awesome.
I got a tingle.
my idea, but you know.
Yeah.
But think about that, patent right? That. And that may not be 500 years away.
Yeah.
Right? That may be 20 years away, if that. If we know one thing, it's that technology is often applied to sexuality first. So I think things like that are down the road. Certainly as we live in virtual worlds more and more, virtual worlds don't even need to adhere to the basic physical laws that we think of as, you know, gravity and three dimensions and whatnot. And so what's gender going to look like when we're all living in the matrix?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Wow.
So I think the possibilities around gender in the future are far beyond whether or not trans people can use the appropriate bathrooms. I think
sure.
this is sort of our current, you know, just where we are right now. But encouraging this idea of a really, really expansive idea of gender and an openness to gender as just part of our identities, part of our lives that we can play with, explore, and even if I can, I don't know if I can swear on this show.
Absolutely.
But, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I mean, you know, some people describe themselves as doing what's called gender fuck.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
So if that's the case, why can't we fuck with gender in these ways, especially as technology gives us more and more options?
Mm-hmm.
So that's my 50, 100, 500, whatever.
I love it.
Your thought.
Yeah, that's great.
So we're happy to work together on that. So if you want to reach out to me.
If I'm here that far. So we're kind of coming up on time here. What is one final piece of advice that you might give to, say, activists and allies again, you know, as they have these hard conversations with people around the transgender restroom debate?
Sure. You know, I think that many, many people are coming from good places, and there are many people right now who are sort of stuck, who may say things that sound wrong to those of us who are activists, but while there are many people out there who are bigoted and would rather keep us out of public light, there are a lot of people who are saying these things just because they don't know any better.
Yeah.
And I would encourage people to be sympathetic and understanding and be a little bit more tolerant of ignorance, because we don't win allies by poking them in the eye because they didn't get it right up front. You know, I have so many clients, mostly adolescents, who, you know, who expect their parents to get it from day one.
Yeah.
And remember, we've been thinking about this. I'm sure you did as well for a long time.
Yes.
Before transitioning. We think about it for years and years and years, and we've become sophisticated about language and identity and whatever long before we ever tell anybody about our feelings. And so we're at step 100 and they're at step 2. And while it's hard for us to hear that people don't have the sophistication and maybe they use the wrong language or the wrong pronoun or whatever, it's going to take them time. And we need to remember that and be sympathetic toward them while we're still, you know, strongly advocating for what we need.
Yeah.
And again, I think the one point I would make again is that in times of adversity, solidarity is the key. So I think being mindful of issues of solidarity rather than getting into things like oppression Olympics, just remembering that I've never quite understood why marginalized people did not all band together.
Yes.
under this like experience of shared marginalization, right? We're all screwed by culture.
Yep.
That's maybe a little bit of an overstatement, but
and many groups, you know, have come before us that have gone through very similar. And again, not, you know, we hear this a lot with when you talk about segregation and slavery. Is it the same? Obviously not. But there are so many parallels that you have to be able to go, God, don't you? You've got to understand how we feel. And then, right? It's just there's the women's rights movement, and there just all of these groups before us that have gone through similar things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're drawing on their legacy, and there are many people in those groups who do get it.
Yeah.
So I don't want to be bad mapping them.
But, sure.
You know, we often are so troubled by our own individual woes that we sometimes can't pull our head up out of the sand, because what's affecting us individually is often so painful, you know?
Yeah.
And yet I would encourage right now to be a time when we can get outside that, you know, and just be arguing for our rights as people, people who have all had experiences of marginalization in one way or another, and try to fight for everybody's rights, which is what this country was founded on.
So. Absolutely. All right, I'm going to say the title of the book, so you may not hold the phone away. You're in the wrong bathroom! And 20 other myths and misconceptions about transgender and gender nonconforming people. So it's available for pre-order now, releasing May 30th, 2017. Where can we pre-order the book and find out more information about you and the work that you're doing for the community?
Sure. The book is available on Amazon and probably all the other major retailers. You can find it online. Just a quick Google will do that. You can find out more about me at my website, which is www.lauraajacobs.com. remember the extra A in the middle, because there are other Laura Jacobs out there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people can find my email and whatnot at that, at my website.
Awesome. As always, we'll have links to all of that in the show notes on this episode. Laura, thank you so much for sharing your personal journey, your knowledge from the realm of mental health, and especially the hard work you're putting in with your patients. Speaking from experience, finding a knowledgeable, supportive therapist was key in my own journey. Our proverbial door is always open. We'd love to have you back anytime.
I'd be happy to. Thanks so much for the compliments. And thanks to you for getting the word out.
My pleasure. Laura Jacobs, you're in the wrong bathroom! And 20 other myths and misconceptions about transgender and gender nonconforming people. Please go check out this book and continue having the difficult conversations.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
That was good.
You're in the wrong bathroom!
You have to yell it, apparently. That's what she said.
I had to do it. You gotta do it.
You're in the wrong bathroom!
Together!
You're in the wrong bathroom! Oh my gosh. And this one sleeps through it all.
Oh, Jesus.
All right. We hope you enjoyed that interview with Laura A. Jacobs. We're going to take a quick break now. Becca and I will be right back with some news topics and more. You're listening to Sarah Talk.
I was feeling so alone.
I was going through a really difficult time.
I didn't want to bother anyone.
I didn't think they'd understand.
It was tough at first, but I did it.
I'm glad I asked for help.
I asked my teacher.
I asked my dad.
You can do this.
Whatever it is, ask for help.
If you're thinking about suicide or need support, call the Trevor Lifeline at 1-866-488-7386. Ask for help.
Sarah Talk is made possible by our patrons. We love our patrons. If you're not a Sarah Talk patron, you're missing out.
We should do a parody show for bathroom bills at the dog park. Like dogs fighting over which dog gets to pee where.
Or the owners.
Yeah. I feel uncomfortable that my dog has to shit on the transgendered lawn. Fuck that.
Our Patreon fans get access to special patrons-only content, like this nearly two-hour-long bonus episode where we break down Texas Senate Bill 6, the bathroom bill, with our special guest, Jake Vahaba.
My dog hunches over and takes a big runny shit. It's going to do it with other straight shit dogs.
Which is the argument I hear.
Yes,
so.
Exactly what
my dog knows what it is. And it may fuck other men dogs sometimes. And pillows and shit, my kid. But I'm not having my dog shit next to other transgendered hump dogs.
Not only do our patrons get access to all previous patron-only specials for less than the price of a tall whatever Starbucks tries to pass off as a coffee, you'll get an ad-free version of the show, which often includes outtakes and extended segments. And of course, we'll give you a special shout-out on the show. Become a patron now for as little as $1 per episode. Go to patreon.com/saratalk today. That's patreon.com/saratalk. Welcome back to Sarah Talk. God, that was great.
Yeah.
What a great interview. Mm-hmm. Big thanks again to Laura A. Jacobs, author of You're in the Wrong Bathroom!
You just like yelling.
I do. I hope I don't wake our kid up, though. So, we are going to dig into some news topics now. And we're going to try something new this week. We're going to run up right up until the hour mark. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to stop the live show. And we're going to cut the second part of the show to the patrons, right? So you get an extended version of the whole damn show.
Nice.
So we'll get through as many topics as we can get through. And then whatever we can't get through in the time that's left, then we'll cut that. And that will be exclusive for the patrons at patreon.com/SarahTalk.
All right.
What do you think
of
that?
So you get 15 minutes of free news. And if you want any more...
And it's not really news, it's commentary.
Yeah,
and,
no, I know.
Us doing what we do. So let's start with, I promised you last week, and it was a lie. that we would talk about Gavin Grimm.
Lies.
Gavin Grimm, of course, you know, is the transgender teen boy who was working through the court system. The Gloucester County School Board had given him, initially had given him an accommodation, a personal accommodation to use the boys' room. And then, as I'm seeing more interviews with him coming out now, in his own words, supposedly a concerned citizen, right? And as we've seen in Texas, that means a big evangelist Christian organization that wants to come in and, you know, fight the good fight on your behalf, but whatever. Had a problem with that. And so they called a special session of the school board.
Don't say.
And the school board decided then in a vote that they would not allow him to use the boys' restroom. So, of course, he took the school board to court. It went its way through the courts, escalated all the way up to the petition to the Supreme Court to be have the case be heard. And they initially were going to take the case. And then America made the biggest fucking blunder that we've made in decades and elected Donald Trump. And by doing so, we effectively rolled back the Obama administration's protections for transgender people. One of the first few things that Trump did was come in and say, nope, we're going to take that away. We're going to take that away. And trans kids, take that away. And so, in light of the change in the way the administration is interpreting Title IX, the Supreme Court decided, yeah, we really don't need to hear this case because everybody's kind of in agreement now, right? Except for the kid. Yeah, fuck the kid. What does he need? You know, it's just, it's garbage. It could have been such a precedent-setting thing to have this go to the Supreme Court. And it could have been precedent-setting the wrong way, too. Like, it could have been.
Oh, well, it could have gone either way.
Yeah. So now you've got fucking Gorsuch in there. And he is, if you look at his record, he, and we'll talk about it a little bit, but he's going to do all kinds of dangerous garbage.
He's not a good man.
To the cases that are heard. So I just wanted to read a little bit from the order from the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals. Basically, so they vacated the preliminary injunction. So here's what the order says. Upon consideration of the unopposed motion to vacate preliminary injunction, the court vacates the preliminary injunction entered by the district court on June 23rd, 2016. Senior Judge Davis wrote a concurring opinion in which Judge Floyd joined, entered at the direction of Judge Floyd and with the concurrence of Judge Niemeyer and Senator and Senior Judge Davis. So basically, what has happened is all of the courts have gone, okay, never mind. The school board's decision stands. And so what that means is that Gavin will have to continue and graduate. This won't get resolved before he's graduated. So he will not be allowed to use the boys' restroom, locker room, yada, 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 for the rest of his time at the school.
It makes me wonder, like, how do the girls feel about that?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
How like they're making all this, you know, this fuss about, well, we don't want this kid in the boys' bathroom. Well, okay, fine, because it's going to make the boys uncomfortable. But okay, well, is it going to make the girls uncomfortable? Because I mean, and I'm not one of those people who really cares. Right. I don't care.
And you've said that before on the show.
You know, I don't care. But I know that there's a lot of people that would make uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I were in a public restroom and a man just came into the bathroom, it would shock me probably because it's not the normal
occurrence. It's not expected, right?
You know, and any time I'm in close, small quarters with anybody, I have, you know, if I don't know them, my guard's up until I know that I'm safe. But I just wonder, like, you know, they're so focused on the one side of this. Okay, well, you're going to, in effect, send him back to the girls' bathroom.
Right.
And he's not going to use the girls' bathroom, let's just be honest.
He'll have to go
to the nurse's office.
Right.
But, you know, like, how do the girls feel about that? Because what if he had to go so bad that he couldn't make it to the nurse's office?
Sure.
So he went into the girls' bathroom.
Right.
Because if I was in that situation, that's what I would do. I'd be fine. You don't want me to go where I want to go, then I'm just going to go wherever. And, you know, at that point, it's, you're going to treat me like a child. I'm going to act like treat me like a 2-year-old. I'll act like one. So I don't know.
Let me read from the court order here. This is Davis, Senior Circuit Judge, concurring. I concur in the order granting the unopposed motion to vacate the district court's preliminary injunction and add these observations. All right. He's saying, I agree. We should just basically dismiss this case and not consider it further. Gavin Graham, then a 15-year-old transgender boy, addressed the Gloucester County School Board on November 11th, 2014, to explain why he was not a danger to other students. He explained that he had used the boys' bathroom in public places throughout Gloucester County and had never had a confrontation. He explained that he is a person worthy of dignity and privacy. He explained why it is humiliating to be segregated from the general population. He knew intuitively what the law has in recent decades acknowledged. The perpetuation of stereotypes is one of many forms of invidious discrimination. And so he hoped that his heartfelt explanation would help the powerful adults in his community come to understand what his adolescent peers already did. Gavin Grimm clearly and eloquently attested that he was not a predator, but a boy, despite the fact that he did not conform to some people's idea about who is a boy. Regrettably, a majority of the school board was unpersuaded. And so we come to this moment. High school graduation looms, and by this court's order vacating the preliminary injunction, Gavin Grimm's banishment from the boys' restroom becomes an enduring feature of his high school experience. Would that courtesies extended to others had been extended to Gavin Grimm. Our country has a long and ignominious, big words, ignominious
you
history.
You didn't proofread this.
I didn't proofread. History of discriminating against our most vulnerable and powerless. We have an equally long history, however, of brave individuals. Dred Scott, Fred Korematsu, Linda Brown, Mildred and Richard Loving, Eddie Windsor, and Jim Obergefell, to name just a few, who refused to accept quietly the injustices that were perpetuated against them. It is unsurprising, of course, that the burden of confronting and remedying injustice falls on the shoulders of the oppressed. These individuals looked to the federal courts to vindicate their claims to human dignity, but as the names listed above make clear, the judiciary's response has been decidedly mixed. Today, Gavin Graham adds his name to the list of plaintiffs whose struggle for justice has been delayed and rebuffed. As Dr. King reminded us, however, the arc of moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. Gavin Graham's journey is delayed, but not finished. And it goes on, but that's really what I not what I wanted to read from it.
This is kind of frustrating. I feel bad because
so frustrating.
Like he's spent basically his whole high school career
fighting this fight
yep. for nothing, basically, because they're just gonna go, oh, never mind.
Well,
I mean, I don't know. I'm hoping something will come out of it.
You're right. And if nothing else, it's brought visibility to the issue. You know, as much damage as Caitlyn Jenner has done with her.
Oh my God,
right-wingy Caitlin. Republican stuff, you know, her coming out at least did a bit of good in bringing awareness to transgender people.
Yeah.
This is from NBC News. The U.S. Supreme Court term is nearly over, but the influence of the newest justice, Neil Gorsuch, is likely to have an immediate effect on one of the most important cases yet to be heard and on helping select cases the court will take up next. History will be made Monday, this was for last week, when Justice Anthony Kennedy administers the judicial oath to Gorsuch at a White House ceremony. Never before has a sitting justice sworn in a former clerk to become a colleague on the High Court bench. Chief Justice John Roberts will privately administer the separate constitutional oath earlier in the day. Court hears the final 13 cases of the term during the last 2 weeks in April, when it will be back at full strength for the first time since Antonin Scalia died 14 months ago. Gorsuch will not be able to vote on cases that were argued before he arrived at the court, but he may have a decisive role to play in an important freedom of religion case to be heard on April 19th. It's 2 days. At stake are laws in well over half the states that prohibit spending tax dollars to support churches. The states say the restrictions are necessary to keep the government from meddling in religious affairs. But to the challengers, they're nothing more than a form of discrimination. The case involves a lawsuit brought by Trinity Lutheran Church in Columbia, Missouri. It applied for money from a state program that provides grants to nonprofits seeking to cover gravel playgrounds with a rubber surface made from recycled tires. And it sounds like a worthy use of my tax dollars, except it's the church. And the church wanted to improve the playground at its preschool and daycare center. But the state rejected the application, thank you, citing a provision in the Missouri Constitution that says, quote, no money shall ever be taken from the treasury directly or indirectly in any of any church, sect, or denomination or of religion. As a judge on the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals in Denver, Gorsuch supported a private company and an order of Catholic nuns who argued in two separate cases that they should not have to provide contraceptive insurance coverage for their employees, despite Obamacare's requirements, because doing so would violate their religious beliefs. And this goes on too, but so basically it's just case after case after case where this guy has been on the wrong side of the mm-hmm. church state line. The cases they're going to look at taking up, let's see. Religious freedom is the heart of a pending court case that is not yet agreed to hear, testing whether businesses can refuse on religious grounds to provide services for same-sex weddings. Over the past few months, justices have repeatedly listed the case for discussion at their private conferences where they decided which cases they hear. Gorsuch could provide the fourth vote needed to grant review. That case will likely be among those discussed when Gorsuch meets with the rest of the court in a closed-door conference Friday, his first official act as a justice. So he could decide, he could be the swaying vote that decides, yeah, let's hear that case. Let's hear that case. And by the way, we'll probably lean the way, you're right. So if you're going to argue to hear a case, you're going to do so because you believe that you have a good shot of, when you know, you, getting your right. way. Because if he thought for a minute that, okay, we hear that case and I'm going to lose, and they're going to say that, that businesses don't have the right to discriminate same-sex couples getting married services.
Right.
Then he's going to argue not to take the case.
Kill it dead in the water.
Right. Anyway, so that's that.
Yeah.
Speaking of the White House, were we talking about the White House? No.
No, we're talking about the Supreme Court. Supreme Court.
Wow. Wow. That's segue 101 class we just failed right there. White House.
I said nothing.
Okay, listen. Hey, happy belated Zombie Jesus Day, by the way. Yeah. Again, I just, somebody, Britton, our friend Britton, posted a thing on Facebook that said, you know, if Jesus didn't die for your sins, would you still love him? And I was like, well, come on, you know where I stand here. Like, I don't see why an all-powerful, why the all-powerful creator of the universe needs to lower himself to the idea of another, one more fucking human sacrifice in order to get his point across.
Right.
Like, that seems savage and unnecessary and not all-powerful, knowing, just, godly creator.
Well, especially when you look at the fact that the whole reason that he died, quote, you know, for us, was because of the things that Satan did. Ooh, he created all these problems.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So this is not an act of, I don't know, you know.
Right, yeah. anyway, so speaking of evil and Satan in the White House, Donald Trump.
That was much better.
That was better, yeah. Okay, so, you know, that they do the annual Easter egg roll at the White House.
They used to, anyway.
Well, they used to. actually, one of my friends that I worked with back in the day at the one of the hotels.
I remember.
He took his son. Yeah, it was really cool. And we crowdfunded his, you know,
travel. Was it last year or the year before?
I think it was last year.
Yeah.
I think so.
He went to the last good one.
Yeah. So this comes from the Raw story. White House asked Sesame Street characters to appear at its annual Easter egg roll just 4 days after President Donald Trump's administration proposed ending all funding for PBS and the Sesame Street program.
Please tell me that they got the finger from the bird.
I think Big Bird only has four fingers. Which finger would be the flip finger?
I don't know.
If you only have four?
If you only have four? Well, it would still be the same because we only have four fingers. We have a thumb.
And then somebody, you know, I saw somebody online trying to make the argument like, yeah. But listen, Sesame Street was bought out by HBO. It's not even really a PBS thing anymore. I'm sorry. It's the fucking principle.
It's still.
I grew up with the children's workshop, whatever, and Sesame Street on your local over-the-air PBS station. And if it weren't for PBS, Sesame Street would never have been a thing.
And still, even though Sesame Street is owned by HBO now, there are still a number of other programs on the public broadcasting network that are there for educational purposes and, you know, that people actually need.
Well, wait till you get to the end of the story.
Jeez.
Okay. PBS confirmed to the New York Times that the White House had made a last-minute request for Sesame Street characters like Big Bird or Elmo to appear at this year's event. Quote, "We got word about this year's egg roll and are working on planning," end quote. PBS spokesperson Jennifer Rankin Byrne explained to the paper on March 20th. Sesame Workshop spokesperson Elizabeth Weinreb Fishman revealed that one costumed character would be appearing at the event, a departure from the multitude of Muppets that have showed up for the role in recent years. I don't know who went. Big Bird, probably. That's the easiest, I think, to costume up and send out. Just 4 days before PBS confirmed its participation, the Trump administration had released its budget plan to eliminate all federal funding for PBS. This is Office of Management and Budget Director Mick Mulvaney talking to MSNBC on March 16th. Quote, "When you start looking at places that we reduce spending, one of the questions we asked was, can we really continue to ask a coal miner in West Virginia or a single mom in Detroit to pay for these programs? The answer was no." You got the answer wrong, Mick. The answer is poor coal miners in West Virginia and poor single moms in Detroit, their children need this programming more than anybody else. You took it away from the damn people who need it the most.
Yep.
Garbage. People who can't afford to send their kids to daycare and pre-K.
Yeah.
If the state doesn't fund it, because you don't believe in that either.
Right.
Right? Where do they fucking learn anything?
Yeah.
They learn it from Sesame Street.
Well, that's where I learned my... I didn't go to pre-K. We had Sesame Street.
All right. We're up on time here.
Yeah, we are.
We're going to do our... we're going to cut this and go to the outro.
Okay.
And then we're going to do... the rest of these news stories we'll do on the patron side of the world. So if you'd like to hear the rest of this, please head over to patreon.com/Theratalk. Seriously, it's as little as a dollar per episode. We do one a week. And you can say, hey, I want to do $2 per episode, but a maximum of $4 per month, right? So that's it. It tops it out. So you don't have to, you know, have to.
You tell us.
This is you telling us what are we worth to you? What is this entertainment venture? You know, what do you get from it? And you can tell us. And whatever you can afford is great. We're not asking for much. Every little bit helps, and all the dollars pile up. So, when we come back to the Patreon side of this, we're going to talk about the email I got from Donald Trump. He is selling a piece of now iconic, I guess, American current president history, something, I don't know. Anyway, he wants you to buy something he's worn.
Oh God. Okay. Well, that'll be interesting.
Yeah.
Yes, is it gold leafed?
That can go a few different ways.
Is it gold leafed?
we're going to talk about a Pakistani person who was killed for alleged blasphemy.
Oh.
That's coming up.
Yikes.
Again.
Tell me there's some happy stuff in that bio.
I don't know. Maybe the last one is very happy. Oh, the last story is very happy. Again, a couple of state legislatures who are passing garbage legislation to allow churches to have privilege in our society. We're going to get into female genital mutilation and circumcision again. The Texas bathroom bill moves now to the House. In the House, they're taking up not Senate Bill 6. They're not taking up the correlative bill that matches. They've decided to take up a different version of the bill. We'll talk about what those nuances are. North Carolina doubles down on their bigotry and tried to pass a bill that says that they're going to ban gay marriage in the state. Like, somehow that overturns the Supreme Court. Wow. All right, good luck with that.
Wow.
And we're going to listen to Pat Robertson whine about feminization of boys. And then then I have a Florida man story to round off the day. So
right.
I'm going to throw it to the outro here, and then we'll be back on patreon.com/Saratalk. This is episode 50. As always, thanks for joining us on episode 50 here of Saratalk. We have some exciting things coming up. Again, we'll be talking to Dr. Colt Kielmeyer in the near future. He's a trans man and doctor in Texas who is, he was in the Senate Bill 6 State Affairs Committee hearing and gave quite a lengthy testimony, some question and answer back and forth with him. And, you know, we don't really get to hear about the trans masculine perspective. So it's going to be exciting to talk to him. And I really want to find out more about what he does in the community and more about his own personal journey. So we'll do that on an upcoming show. And then also, we'll be wrapping up an episode that I've been working on for a few months now. A friend of mine posted on Facebook that men are pigs and nobody wants to be in a committed one-on-one relationship anymore. And so we're going to dive into that. We've recorded the first half, which is with Wade and Byrne from the Psygasm podcast, and they talk about the science of human sexuality. And then we will be talking to Carrie Ichikawa Jenkins. She's the author of a book, What Love Is and What It Could Be, and we'll discuss her book, and she can help us work through present-day relationships and understand if, you know, monogamy is a normal thing for humanity, or are we kind of setting ourselves up for failure in our relationships by not being able to talk openly about our desires for additional partners or other things like that. So looking forward to all of these great conversations coming up here on Saratalk. Also, April 22nd is Earth Day. That's this weekend. And we are planning to be at Lake Eola. We're going to the Orlando March for Science. And if you're going to be there, please let us know. It'd be awesome to meet up with you and say hi. Go to marchforscience.com to find out more information and look up events near you. Again, that's marchforscience.com. April 22nd, 2017 is Earth Day. And if you're not going to be in Orlando, that's cool too. Let us know where you're going to be. Send some pictures to us, tweet, Facebook, email, producer@saratalk.com. Send us information about where you're going to be and what you did for Earth Day, and tell us how nature inspires you. Another big thank you to Laura A. Jacobs, co-author of the book, You're in the Wrong Bathroom, and 20 other myths and misconceptions about transgender and gender nonconforming people. Go pre-order the book, check it out. We'll see you next time on Saratalk.
Saratalk is made possible by listener support. Visit patreon.com/Saratalk to become a patron and help keep this program going. Contact Sarah and company by email at producer@saratalk.com or call 224-40-SARAH. That's 224-407-2724. And follow us on social media, facebook.com/saratalkradio and on Twitter @saratalkradio. Saratalk is a production of Sarah Austin Media.